Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready? Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. We're here. Joel's back.
Hi.
Am I talking too loud, Joel?
No, I don't mind it.
I was just trying to be enthusiastic.
I felt it.
You've
lifted me.
Because I know you're tired.
Yeah.
And I'm okay, so I thought I'd try and pick up the...
Bring me to your okay level.
Yeah.
I'm getting closer.
Doesn't sound it. But, yes, you're back. You were busy last week. You've been busy. You've been a busy little boy,
aren't
you?
I'm a busy little boy.
Yeah.
Buzzing around. You were talking about me being a buzzy little bee, pollinating other podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a bit weird, your intro last week.
Did it? Yeah. I didn't listen back to it. I don't like doing them on my own, Joel.
I can tell.
I like doing them with you.
It always sound like a hostage tape or something.
Well, buzzing around, pollinating other podcasts is a nice analogy.
Yeah, it's quite fun.
Is it an analogy?
Yeah.
If it's talking about podcasts still? So the bee bit is an analogy.
Yeah, the bee bit's definitely an analogy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so you've been good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You've been great.
I haven't asked. Are you good?
Good.
Yeah. Sorry, this is all over the shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, yeah. Busy. Nice. Yeah, it's all lovely.
Are the Christmas gigs coming thick and fast?
Today's the first one. So, last week, Ed Byrne. I've had loads of great feedback about it.
He was great.
I've had loads of stuff on my... I can't go back and find the... Basically, loads of comics have said to me that they've really enjoyed the episode. Mm. And the Milton one.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a few people have told me they
some
really
big
liked.
Hitters.
Yeah, and big hitter this week, Joel.
That was my segue. Did you like it?
Well, it's ruined now you said that.
No.
Yeah.
This whole show is about the craft. I'm just furthering that to the craft.
The podcast
of segues.
Craft. Yeah. When you're out pollinating your podcast. Is that something you learn? Is that something you learn when you're buzzing around?
You can't be taught that, mate. It's innate. You don't teach a bee to pollinate.
No.
Yeah, it just does it.
That kind of sounded all right, didn't it?
Yeah.
This week, Gary Delaney.
Awooga!
Awooga. Hashtag Awooga for Gary Delaney. We did a live podcast in Thirsk. and it's called the Podcast Social Club, and they ran like a couple of days, and it was just loads of podcasts all going on. It was brilliant and well attended. It's very good. We were really chuffed with how many people came to watch. I haven't listened to it back. Can you hear that there are people there?
You can hear that there are people there, and you can hear them, they're enjoying themselves.
Oh, you can. Oh, yeah. Good. Because you never know how much the mic picks up. But it was a really good, fun show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it gets super geeky, I think. Would you say that, Joel?
Yeah.
Oh, and also, what I normally do with the live shows is, and at the beginning, I've got a segue here, Joel. I've got a segue coming. So, normally, what I do with a live show is, and I'll tell you in a second, because it just reminded me that we've got a live show. Look at that segue. If you're listening to this on the day it was released, the first day.
And you're thinking, what should I do tonight?
Yeah. At 6:30.
6:30.
What, you finish work at 5:30, you could get along to Angel.
Yeah.
To the Bill Murray pub.
Easy.
Why wouldn't you want to go to the Bill Murray pub anyway?
Love it.
It's about comedy. The pub is about comedy. It's called Bill Murray.
Exactly.
And he's a comic actor, isn't he, Joel? Very good one.
I didn't actually know for a long time that it was named after Bill Murray, the comedian.
Shut up. Of course you did.
I thought that must
well,
be
a comedian. Is he a comedian? This
of
is
of course
question.
He's a comedian.
Was he a stand-up?
Don't know.
So is a comic actor a comedian?
Good question.
Is a good question.
Tweet us.
Tweet us at Jokes with Mark.
Is Bill Murray a comedian?
Is Bill Murray a comedian?
Mark Simmons says Bill Murray, not funny.
I did not say that. Funny actor, but is he just saying what funny people have written?
Mm.
Does that make him?
Aren't some stand-ups just that?
I'm not going to comment on that. but I'm not.
No, you're not.
But...
Well, good to know.
But, yeah, good question.
Because that makes this podcast really interesting because you'd be doing jokes other people have written that don't work.
Yeah, which is really stupid. Yeah. Don't pick those ones. Pick the good ones.
Murray, 6:30.
Yeah,
see you there.
6:30. See you there. Just turn up on the door. There'll be tickets, I'm sure, available. It's quite a big room. And it's Gareth Richards, exciting. Edinburgh Award newcomer nominee. You've heard him on Frank Skinner's radio show.
Mm-hmm, I have.
You've heard it. You've seen him on Russell Howard's Good News.
I did.
And you've seen him in Edinburgh every year.
Exactly.
Great stuff.
Good stuff.
Good, brilliant solid stuff.
Let's get on with Gary Delaney.
Yeah, I get on with him. We've got a lot in common. We both like one-liners. Here he is.
So, before I bring Gary out, what I thought I'd do as a little warm-up, as kind of just to get in a joke mood, I've been writing my new show for next year, so I've got a list of jokes here that I don't know if they're going to be in yet. So I could test them on you, and then the ones that don't work, maybe we'll chat about. How's that sound? Good?
Yeah.
Cool. Give me a chance if you like one-liners.
Yeah.
Yes. Good stuff. So, I was doing a crossword the other day. I said to my girlfriend, the clue is lemon carbonated drink. She said, 7 up. I said, no, 6 across. There we go. All right. Well, I'm ticking that one. That one is getting a tick. So my favourite thing about going to the hairdressers is, oh, guys, why are you late? I've got to start again now. You're right. Thumbs up. Do you know the podcast?
Yeah.
Do you? He went, no. Cool, welcome. I can't be bothered. So I'm just doing some jokes to sort of warm you guys into it a bit. So my favourite thing about going to hairdressers is the head massages, although some people find it uncomfortable because I don't work there. All right, not as good, that one. Right, I think let's just get cracking with the podcast. We have got a wonderful guest. We are very lucky. I'm lucky. I'm over the moon that he's coming to do it. Please put your hands together. Welcome to stage, Gary Delaney. Okay. Here he is. Gary Delaney is in the house.
Hello. I've been hidden in a little stationery cupboard. It's been quite good fun.
How's it going, Gary?
Yeah, things are good, mate. Things are good. Look, I've got 2 cups of tea.
You have,
yeah. I'm ready to fuck shit up.
Oh, God. I just got water. Any thoughts on those ones, Gary?
Yes.
Oh, good. Can you fix any of them?
Yeah, I can try. I mean, they're good, but tell me again the hairdresser one.
My favourite thing about going to the hairdressers is the head massages, although some people find it uncomfortable because I don't work there.
Right. You've got an ambiguity in there you can remove.
Okay.
Why is it your favourite thing about going to the hairdressers? Why isn't it people's favourite things? Because you go to the hairdressers, it's your head massage and you don't work there, but you could still go there and get a head massage even though you're not a member of staff. But if you said most people's favourite thing about going to the hairdressers is head massages...
Yeah.
Then it's more obvious that it's you doing it. You can reuse that ambiguity. What was the middle bit of that one? Sorry, I'm pointing at my pen.
You know what? I don't know it well enough. Anyone remember the middle bit? Hairdressers, actually, this changed quite a few times. So at the moment, it's some people find it uncomfortable, which actually, I've changed it since then.
Right.
That's no longer the wording. Because the uncomfortable, I think, made people think, like, literally uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I changed it to weird, and that made it work better when I've tried it.
So you'd be like, I do it as, like, most people...
their favourite bit.
Most people like getting a massage at the hairdresser, but some people aren't so keen, probably because I don't work there. And then you've removed the you from it.
That is much better, isn't it? This is basically, just so you know, this is why I created the podcast, so other people can make my jokes work. So...
Well, I don't know if it's as sharp as you, but you got... A joke is misdirection, right? So you're trying to send people along a specific train of thought.
Yep.
And the more ambiguity you can remove from that, the more you can send them on the exact line that you want for a more of a swerve when you switch the tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
So anything that's ambiguous is wasting their mental energy on considering a possibility that you don't want them to be considering.
Also,
so you can remove that. And
So basically, I did the podcast with Milton Jones a little while ago.
Yeah.
And he was saying the difference between us and some other comics is they get the audience on an emotional sort of roller coaster. But you almost are doing that a little bit there. You're getting them emotionally invested as they're thinking, yeah, we do like that. Rather than just me saying, I like it, by saying, you know, most people like the head massage, and there's a group they're going, yeah, we do.
Okay, that's interesting.
I
listened on the way here to your interview, Milton. I thought that was really good, and he has that point in that a part of most stand-up is whether the comic identifies with the performer and buys into their story and likes them and is sort of on side, which is easy if somebody's talking about their life and they're a likable character and they're talking about real things, because you can identify. You can say, well, I've had those, you know, discussions with my wife or whatever it is, or I've had that trouble or that, you know.
Yeah.
It's harder when you're dealing in abstracts. And pretty much everything that we do is abstract and it's just about language and there's no meaning or point of view in it.
Yeah.
So I don't really consider any of my jokes as having anything for people to buy in. But they may anyway.
Yeah.
I can be sort of surprised by how that... Look, all right, I like things I can measure and work out.
Mm.
And I would consider that a comedy show, a one-liner comedy show, is a technical structure with a series of jokes put into a structure where you think works, and then each punchline should work, and you get the laughter, and you tot it up, and that's your show.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have considered up until about 4 weeks ago that it contained a particularly large element of goodwill.
Okay.
However, I did a show at the Hawth in Crawley, and it was I was just in the studio there. It was the third time I'd done it on this tour, in this little tiny studio room about this size, and it's
absolutely
a weird
massive
little setup. Yeah, massive. Yeah, so you know,
full, sold out,
2,000 or 3,000 people in. Right, no. So it's like a little 150 seater, and there's no stage. You're just on the floor in front of people. Some of them, most of them are banked, and I've got a screen behind you for me to do my computer bits to start getting bored after 30 minutes. So I'm doing that, and I'm setting up the show, and I come out, I do a bit before the support to relax me and to get some jokes and just to try out some new bits and stuff. So
that's interesting. That's exactly the same as Milton does.
Yeah. I really love it. It's my favourite bit of the show.
And because my point was hit to him was, I guess that's because it breaks up the one-liners. You've got a few ones, because quite often, if you do too many one-liners in a row, I mean, even I... watching a one-liner comic start to sort of, my mind wanders. But that way, by breaking up with a different sort of act...
Other things being equal, every one-liner will get slightly less than the last. So you get diminishing returns, which is fine if you're only doing 20 minutes, you're doing 100 jokes. By the time you're doing 200 or 250, that diminishing returns problem is quite pronounced. So whenever you watch a one-liner comic doing a longer set, you're looking to find what solutions have they found to the problem of diminishing returns. So Milton uses character.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Vine will use his songs and his prop jokes. Jimmy Carr, Frankie Ball would use a lot of audience work. Dimitri Martin would use guitars and bits of songs. So there's all sorts of little devices. I use a lot of PowerPoint-y stuff and just take a lot of jokes and present them visually rather than by ear, and that really works. So I use all that stuff for pacing purposes. So that's why there's a big screen behind me. But this bit at the start of the show that I was doing is really just an intro to set things up for the support. It's my mate, I want him to have a nice time. B, I do it because it relaxes me. I go out and all I'm really doing is teeing up the show, and hey, there'll probably be some jokes coming along, but there's no pressure on it. So when I do some funnies and they relax, and then I relax, so then I haven't got to worry about it. It takes all the pressure off the opening line later on because I've already done a bit. So that bit started off as 2 minutes and is now probably about 15, and I do quite a lot of jokes in there. I'll probably do 50 or 60. And I put in some new bits, which is what all these sheets are, is one of these per week of all the little bits new.
This is what I love about it. Oh, sorry, carry on. No, you carry on. I'll come back to that.
But I was at Crawley and I was doing some stuff. I was about 5 minutes in and it was going well. And then there was a spider on the stage, right? A little spider. You know what? If I'd have thought of that at the time, I might have saved the situation.
Just so everyone knows, an audience member said, crawl.
Yeah. And, you know... I'm really annoyed I didn't think of that. And I've clearly been ruminating on this for a month and going in completely the wrong direction. I should have gone for Crawley. Well, it's good to be humbled. We did talk about that earlier, saying you should listen to everybody's joke suggestions.
Yeah.
I get annoyed at comics who are too arrogant to listen to... sometimes somebody will put a joke on Twitter and go, I can't believe people are commenting on it or suggesting how I should improve it. And I always think, how arrogant you are that you think you're a better joke writer than everyone else put together.
Listen
to them, you know. So, Crawley, well done.
Gary's writing that down.
I'm nicking that. Yeah, totally. So this spider starts walking across the front of the stage. And it's interesting because I'm going, right, what are my options? It's quite visible to everybody. It's far enough, it's close enough to me that it's lit by the spotlights.
Mm.
Everyone can see it. We're very early in the show. I don't know where the spider's going to go, right? It could wander around quite merrily. It could go under the seats. It could become the whole rest of the show. It could be people wondering and worrying about where the spider is, mm-hmm. right? So, and I've also got limited options in terms of getting rid of it. I've got to stop the show. And you think, what do I do? Put it under a glass and, you know, get rid of it that way? Well, I haven't got a glass. Well, I've got a glass, but it's got water in it. So that's quite disruptive as well. And I'm trying to build up the show, get some rhythm. I've chucked in quite a bunch of jokes in a row. I've got things going. Mm. And so I think I'm putting all of these at risk. Plus, if I just ignore it, I'm at risk of looking weak and losing their faith in me. And genuinely, though, if I look like I can't handle it, they'll go, well, maybe his jokes aren't that funny. Belief is a big element of jokes. So I'd be shaking that. So I thought, what do I do? So I trod on it. Right? Yeah. And that is what happened. Now, I could see that I'd made the wrong decision.
Oh.
I made a couple of jokes about it. I didn't think of the Crawley one, and I did a few jokes, and then I did my bit, and it was going all right, and then I bought on my support and needed a bit, and then we had a little break, and I came back, I did the show, and I started off the show with something I wrote in the interval, an announcement from my PR lady had asked me to read out, apologising to the spider community, and saying, you know, that's not the sort of person that I am, and all this sort of shit, and it got a laugh, and you go... So comically, you think that should be dealt with, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I know it's a good venue. I know it'd been a good crowd. I know how well it goes. And I know that that particular section of the show is 1 hour. However, I also know that on a responsive night, it will run to 1 hour 5, 1 hour 10, depending on how much I'm mucking about. And in particular, how big the laughs are. The laughs take up a lot of the time on stage. Mm. And I record every show. So I knew that all four shows before that Crawley show had been exactly 1 hour 7 minutes. So I did the show and everything worked. Every setup, every punch, everything clicked into place.
Mm.
But there wasn't the warmth that you would normally get. And I would never really consider that to be a factor in my sort of comedy, which I view as a technical process. But I could tell it was absent in a way that I can't notice it's normally there. You know what I mean? But when it was absent, I fucking noticed it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that show was exactly 1 hour. So there was 7 minutes of warmth that disappeared from the room when I dropped the spider. I can calibrate exactly. I lost exactly 7 minutes of goodwill.
Maybe you could help with climate change.
Yeah, maybe. So that was really interesting. And
that warmth was there in the first few 5 minutes,
would
you say?
Yeah, it was in the first 5 minutes.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was interesting. And I got that partly because I guess I had some goodwill. People had seen before, they were already on side. I start off mucking about and it's a little bit chatty.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have considered there was any sort of emotional buy-in with what I do, which is why I seemed odd that you're talking about the emotional buy-in on that joke, because that doesn't gel with how I think about jokes.
Yeah.
However, there is an element of it, whether it's to the performer or the jokes, or whether it's just the fact they've decided they like you or they trust you or whatever it is. Mm. And I only noticed it when I pissed it away.
Yeah.
And I've been going nearly 20 years, and that was a really abrupt lesson. And I was like, oh, hang on. Here's a thing that, because it wasn't visible to me, I'd completely ignored it. And it was made very visible to me, and I could measure it. And I know that stepping on a spider costs you 7 minutes of goodwill. So that's...
Wow, that's fascinating. But that's what I love about the job, is you're always learning something, always.
I learned something today.
Yeah,
I love the fact that we picked up on the same things. It was pretty much the first thing I said to you when we arrived. And yeah. You said it to me before I even said it.
Mm.
So I was listening to the interview with Milton Jones, and he was talking about acting out jokes, and he mentioned his druid joke, which is a lovely joke. How does it go? My parents had to make a
lot of sacrifices.
Lot of sacrifices, you know, because they were druids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've only ever heard him do that joke. I'd never seen him do that joke.
Yeah.
And Milton explained that, I didn't see it because I wasn't there, but you were there. So he acts it out, doesn't he? A thumb point.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of sacrifices, and he points just behind him.
Right.
And he says that is basically literal misdirection. So if you're doing a show and... The audience, if they're like fans of one-liners, they do start to try and see where you're going
really
with a joke. So for me, if I was watching that and never heard the joke before, I would think he's going to make a sacrifices joke as soon as he said they made a lot of sacrifices.
Of
but by doing the point, he takes people's attention away
from
it.
Well, you're imagining that they're pointing at their house or their car or whatever it is, some sort of symbol, their secondhand TV of the sacrifices they've made. And it's wonderful because that's not a sort of, not something that's normally in the one-liner land.
No.
So normally you'd look at it and go, well, hang on, that should be a redundant body movement. That should detract from the joke. It's a movement that's not part of the storytelling, which in theory should slightly diminish the return from the joke, but it's not. It's increasing there because it's making it deliberate. And it is part of it. So, but it's really interesting. I'd never heard an action used as part of the misdirection. Typically, when somebody acts out a joke, they act out a scene. A joke gets a bigger laugh if people can picture it in their heads as they hear the words. And a technique that a lot of comics use, not particularly one-liner comics, but mostly observational comics, think of your man Richard Pryor, something like that, is they act out the scene. They have the character voices, and they'll often stand to the left and stand to the right. And you know, it's a really powerful technique to literally act out what you're doing. And often you will do the joke, and then you just repeat it as actions and words. And it gets a really big response. People can see exactly what it is, and it gets a big laugh. And I've seen lots of comics use that technique to explain a joke, but I've never heard anyone use it as the misdirection. Never heard that technique used as something deliberately false put in there as a red herring.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting, because that was my thing I learned today. I try to learn, you know, a thing like, I don't know, every time I watch a comic or talk to them, I go, well, what have I learned? And I learned that off Milton. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
But it is brilliant, because, like you say, you've been going 20 years, and you're considered what, like, in the top joke writers in the country, and you still learn something.
I think I've only got good in the last 3 years. I've only worked out what I'm doing.
That's a similar theory, because we were talking about that earlier, because my show last year was me going through a lot of old notebooks of ideas that I wasn't good enough to actually make work, and I'm a better writer. I made them work, and you said exactly the same thing.
My last two shows were about half of old jokes that I couldn't make work when I started off. When you start off as a new comic, your ideas are good. Mm. Your ideas are as good as anyone, but you haven't got the execution, you haven't got the toolkit to fix them. So you go back and you go, right, can I make this into a funny thing? Can I fix this idea? So I would go back and just try and fix it. That's why I've got these piles of paper. I went into my office and just picked up a pile of stuff this morning to find some jokes to talk about. And I've got literally boxes of this sort of stuff.
And is that all? There's some A jokes within these, are there?
Yeah, these are mostly. There's some new material nights like that, so they're a smattering of A's to D's.
So we grade things in the same way, and it might be. I might have listened to an interview with you years ago and picked that up off you, because I go A, B. I don't have a C or anything.
I start off.
Not that I'm too good. If it's a C, I usually go. Mm-mm, but
right, but yeah, right. Well, I go A B C D. So A means I'll use it. That'll go in the show. And if you're doing it at a new material night where you got the false air of support, where people are giving you extra credit because they know it's new, like they're watching with improv, they're giving it a better response than it probably deserves. So it kind of needs to be an A. It needs to be getting at least a few people clapping to stand a chance of making the step up into the set.
Right.
And then you go, then below that, a B, a solid laugh. C, some people laughing. D, I usually say deny I ever said it. D, awful. So I do a new material like these. That was Hot Water in Liverpool a few weeks ago. Fairly typical, but it's about 60 or so jokes in there.
Yeah.
And I did that.
So this was all written...
I wrote those that day, I went through all the ideas in my phone, turned them into jokes. So I had the basic crux of the idea, or I had the little bit of language or the idea or something I thought that I had a weakness in it, had a flexibility. So I was like, here's a thing, here's something that's an ambiguous bit of language or a phrase we're used to interpreting in a certain way, or a pun that I can turn and I can change. So I turned it into jokes, I put it at the end and I hit it, or I put it in the middle and flipped the reverse, and I worked them all out and I jotted it down to 50 or 60, and then I went through and I tested them on Hot Water, and some of them I looked at and was like, I'm not going to say that out loud.
Yeah, okay,
that's
yep.
too bad. Some of them I said out loud differently because I didn't, you know, I looked at it and was like, and in the panic of the moment, you go, hang on, that's not good enough, but I can say it like this.
Mm.
So then you go through and you go, that's why you record them, and you go through and you rewrite how you speak, because there's a tendency to write how you write, i.e. properly, how you were taught at school, and then to speak what you wrote, but that's not how people talk. And joke writing should go in reverse.
Yeah.
You should write how you speak. So when you say it out loud, you'll probably say it differently. So then you go, right, well, listen back to it and then go back and write it that way.
Ah, that's interesting.
Because that's not how we talk.
Yeah,
and it's those flexibilities and inaccuracies in language that give rise to a lot of humour. Contractions and things that are false. So I'll come back to a point on that in a minute. I'm scattering around on too many things. So I had to put this was a batch of about 50, 60 jokes. I was doing them at Hot Water in Liverpool. They got an early and a late show, and there was another show in a little room upstairs. So I could do it three times, a 10-minute set.
Perfect.
So I did it forwards in the first one, backwards in the second one, because you get diminishing returns within a 10-minute. The more jokes that fail, the more skepticism you get in an audience for the reaction to any given joke. So if you do a second one on the same night, you start on the last joke.
Yes, okay.
And then between the two, you get a better grading. And as you can see on these, they've all got A, B, C, D written on them. Some of them just
so scientific, I love it.
And then you go, right, so that's my little list on here. So that's a new material list. So how does it change into a Mr. Mahood list for a show, which is
Mr.
my
Mahood?
Weekly... I'll come back to that.
Oh, I think I should make notes just to pick you up on it.
This is a weekly Mr. Mahood list, and these are just the A's and the B's. So when I'm doing some stuff on a tour show, I can't do C's and D's because they've paid. But I, yeah. I can figure out which ones are A's and which ones are B's.
Yeah.
So I do these as a little testing ground at the start of the tour show. So that becomes a Mr. Mucci. Why is it called Mr. Mahood? It's because I was at the Northwest Comedy Awards many years ago, and there was a Les Dawson Award for comedy, and the guy introducing it did a few of Les Dawson's jokes. It was Ted Robbins. And he did a joke, and I thought it was great. It's a classic old school joke. I don't know if it was Les Dawson's or whoever. I've seen Ken Dodd do it as well. It's a wonderful joke. I'm sure you've heard it, about saying, "Oh, a bit of an announcement. We've got Edna in, and Rand Paul's Edna. She's 111." And everyone goes, "Oh," and he goes, "Oh no, sorry, my mistake. She's ill." Right? And that's a great joke, isn't it?
It's wonderful. It's lovely.
Wonderful joke. And I saw that and I thought, wow, that's good. And why is it good? Well, it's good because it's a great joke, but it's more than a great joke. It has two other advantages. It is a change of pace because it gives you an excuse to pull out a piece of paper and to read a note.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting a texture change. It's like you're a man, letters to my Irish mammy. Who was that? Odd Wellies.
Wellies.
Jimmy Cricket. Yes. So he would do his letters to his Irish mammy or whatever, or a phone call, and they're basically one-liners, but they're structured in a thing.
Yeah.
And they're presented in a slightly different way, and they're the same jokes, but they're slightly packaged. So you're slightly getting over that diminishing returns problem.
Yeah.
So that's another benefit that people had of doing the ill 111 joke. So I looked at that and I thought, I like the technique, how can I use it? So I wrote a joke, and a joke that gave me an excuse to pull out a piece of paper.
Right.
The joke I wrote was... the venue asked me to read out a notice that we'd like to apologise unreservedly to the hen party we had in last night that we did not provide the stripper Mr. Manhood they'd been expecting. Mm. We would also like to apologise to Mr. Mahood for any embarrassment that may have been caused. So that's the joke, right? And you've got a piece of paper. It's not just a prop. It's not just a device. You've also got a piece of paper in your hand. And that means you can write your new material on it and anything you're trying to crowbar into the show.
Yes.
So that's presumably was the logic behind the ill 111 joke. It gave a performer a chance to pull out a piece of paper in a show.
Mm.
So not only have they got a good joke, not only have they got a change of pace, but also they're getting a chance to look at the three or four new jokes they're sneaking in. So I did that Mahood joke for a few years, and I would pull out a piece of paper that had on... Obviously, you learn the joke. The piece of paper didn't have that written on it. The piece of paper had on the three or four jokes I was sneaking in that night.
Mm.
So now I always call these like my Mahood crib sheets. My favourite thing about it is Mr. Mahood was a real man, and he was a fucking knobhead. All right, and this is where the joke came from, because when I was living in Birmingham, there was an event on there by Al Mahajaroon, who are like an Islamist group who are just shits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Mahood was one of their speakers talking about how he fucking hated gay people or whatever, and there was a poster for it at the end of my road, and I went past it and thought it said Manhood.
Aye.
So that was where the joke came from.
Amazing.
And I thought, it's really weird, there's a guy called Mr. Manhood who you think is like a stripper or a gay stripper or something like that, talking about a list of rather socially conservative issues. So Mr. Mahood was a real speaker at an Al Mahajaroon conference, and I quite enjoy the fact that it's based on a real man. So all of my cheat sheets are called Mr. Mahood, and they're all the A's and the B's, and every week on tour I run through those and I do some of the A's and B's to figure out which ones are really A's. So that's what this is. This is a pile of...
So out of those 60 of just brand new ideas, how many do you think ended up A's and B's?
I keep 5%.
5%?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's... So, three?
So, yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah.
Maths.
So, yeah, it's... I always thought...
That's not many out of 60.
Well, it's not. But 5% is my normal sort of hit rate. And maybe it's slightly higher now than it used to be, but it's pretty low. And I always felt a bit of a failure on that, going, well, my hit rate's not high enough, because I've heard other one-liner comics say that they keep a higher percentage of what they write. But I was listening to a podcast with Anthony Jeselnik talking about some stuff.
He's a really good American comic.
Anthony Jeselnik's the best joke writer in the world right now. He's absolutely outstanding. Mm. And Jeselnik said that he keeps 5%. And I was like, good enough for Jeselnik, good enough for me.
Yeah.
So you get all these false positives when you're writing jokes. You get things that work really well. And I know it's something you talked about on here before, a joke that works really well the first time out or the first couple of times out and then never works again. Or something that just works too inconsistently. And, you know, so that's what all of this is. And a lot of it's just to give me a very visual reckoner of trying. You can see these have got ticks, they've got crosses, they've got circles, they've got A's, they've got B's, they've got C's, they've got D's. If I'm previewing a show, every joke is on a cue card. And because you tape your shows to listen back to it, but often you don't have the time, plus it's not very nice to listen to your own voice and listen to shows, I don't like it.
Yeah.
So I will have the cards and I will write on every night A, B, C, D as I do the joke, and sometimes even a comment as well. And then you try them in different positions. You know, some jokes only work in some positions in the set. Pretty much any joke should work in the first third of a set.
Yes.
Very few jokes are going to work in the last third of a set, because it's a much harsher environment because of all the things you've done before. So you might do jokes that are ruder or whatever. So I have these cards, and they will just say at a glance, I will try it 15 times, and it will have 10 A's, 3 B's, and 2 D's. And unless they're nearly all A's, then it goes in the bin. And depending on the diversion, you go, well, if it's got 10 A's and 3 B's, I'll probably still use it.
Yes.
If it's got a common pattern, you would see will be something that would have 60% A's and 40% D's. And you go, and it will go really, really well, or sometimes absolutely die. And you go, well, I can't use that.
Yeah, it's not consistent.
So I find that really interesting. And that gives me a really easy, ready reckoner. So I have piles and piles of paper around my office. And I've got more low tech as I get older.
So have you got any that have annoyed you that they didn't work, that you personally really like?
Yeah, probably. Let's have a, should we have a start? Should we dig into
Yes, here's some.
I really like this. There's a problem with obviousness. Now, you know this. Some people start to anticipate your patterns, don't they? Right. So you can mix up your patterns and you can do different types of jokes. I like, in an ideal world, I would do approximately a third of my jokes being like bad taste or dark or sick or rude or whatever. A third of them being silly. Mm-hmm. And a third of them being something you have to slightly more think about.
Yeah.
And that gives more texture to the show, but it also makes it harder for people to second guess where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
So I like that variety.
And would you group them in those sections or mix them up a bit?
Mix them up.
Right.
Usually. Yeah. Occasionally I might chunk a few bits for effect, but not usually. So I like when people start to second guess things, and I will try to then make that into a thing and then try to flip it around. When a joke's more obvious, you've got to get to the punchline before they have. I've heard you talk about that.
Yeah.
Now, what was your example that you were talking about on it?
What about speeding it up?
Yes, yeah.
So it's a joke that's in my set now. I went to the bookshop, asked the woman, has she got any books about how to prevent premature ejaculation? She found one, but it was too late.
Oh, nice, yeah, lovely.
Right.
Right.
But I found that when I left a gap, it didn't work.
Yeah, because normally you'd put a little pause before the punchline for emphasis.
Yeah.
You go 1, 2, pause 3, right? And that they're going to guess it.
Mm.
So it doesn't work. Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I had a similar one. I had a joke that didn't work until I got the breathing right. It's the right formula for this sort of one-liner, one long sentence with two commas. That's what I normally use. And it was, I went to see the stalactites at Cheddar Gorge, and our guide asked us not to try and crack one off, and she wasn't even that attractive. Now,
I've heard you do that one. Yeah,
yeah, well, that was a classic video. Now, that joke only works if you take one deep breath at the beginning.
Okay, like that one of mine.
Yeah,
okay.
If you breathe in the middle, that joke won't work. So when I tried that joke initially and I didn't take a big enough breath, I would telegraph the end and it would get a groan rather than a laugh. So I went to see the stalactites at Cheddar Gorge and our guide asked us not to try and crack one off. And she wasn't even that attractive. That's not funny.
Do you think that is because crack one off, no matter what situation you put it in, people think... crack one off.
Yeah, your primary meaning of crack one off is have a wank.
Yeah.
And your secondary meaning might be break something off.
Yeah.
So that's the problem that you've got.
If you're talking about the other way.
Yeah, you want, as a joke, you normally want the secondary meaning.
Mm.
But that on that one, I'm using the primary meaning. So to try and fluff that, I'm racing through it. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely.
I like the fact you said fluff as well.
Yeah, well, that's completely untapable. Yeah, so that's weird. So this isn't in a similar thing. And when I record the laughs on these, I record where they come, because sometimes the end of a joke isn't where you think it is, you know? It's been a good week for me. On Monday, I met one of my heroes, Craig David. On Tuesday, we went for a drink.
There's the laugh. Yeah.
That's where I write, and that's not where it's supposed to be, right? And the punchline is, so I avoided him on Wednesday, right? But I can't get to that because you all anticipate it enough.
Mm.
And so what would my two options be? Normally you would say obfuscate it, make it deliberately misphrase it. So Monday I went on a Heroes Craig David, we went for a drink. On Tuesday we went for a drink, but I'd say it obliquely. And then the next day we went for a drink rather than say Tuesday to make it slightly harder. But still people get it.
Yeah.
You go, well, that's not working, so then what would be the next thing you'd try? The next thing I'd try would be, does it work enough that I can do it without the punchline and put it in as a show and say, hey, you know what we're doing here. Mm. I'm not even going to do the punchline to this joke and let them fill in the blanks themselves.
Yeah.
So that's another way I sometimes will save a joke like that and make use of it. And I haven't managed to make any of those techniques work on that. So if you've got one, I'm all ears. I really love that joke and I can't find a way to use it.
So if, when you try it and they laugh before the punchline,
yeah.
If you let the laugh die out and then did the punchline just wouldn't hit.
Or die. Well, I think you had the same. When I was a new comic, I'd do that and like the bridge of the joke or the middle bit or the setup would get a laugh. And I'd be like, well, hey, if you like that, you're going to love this next bit. No, not at all.
What was the original setup again?
It's been a good week for me. On Monday, I met one of my heroes, Craig David. On Tuesday, we went for a drink. So I avoided him on Wednesday. It was slightly
so if you went from met Craig David and then went, on Monday, I met Craig David, I avoided him on Wednesday. Have you tried that? Go straight to the punchline.
So I saw him again on Tuesday, avoided him on Wednesday. Yeah, you could do that.
I wouldn't have even mentioned Tuesday,
maybe. Just leave Tuesday out completely and let's leave that all as implicit.
Because everybody knows.
Everybody's going to jump from Monday to... Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea.
I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things that you don't know until you try it.
Yeah, so rhythmically, I'd still be tempted to put a bit in the middle. On Monday, I met one of my heroes, Craig David, and it went pretty well. And let's just say I avoided him on Wednesday.
He wanted to see me again.
Maybe. He wanted to see me again. Well, yeah, so I said, right, not Wednesday.
Yeah. That's nice. And that's straight to the punch.
That's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, or I'm busy Wednesday.
Yeah,
that could work.
Although, also, I do believe they made love on Thursday and Friday and Saturday. It's not. I don't think you're safe again until Sunday when he's resting.
Yeah, unless that's the second punch is that you made that mistake and then saw him Thursday. I don't know how you'd word that.
See, so this is good. You see, I like this because I've abandoned it too soon. And I think we have a tendency to do that.
Well, I honestly think that if there's a funny idea, there is a perfect way somehow of making it work. But I mean, it can take 5 years, 6 years.
Oh, I've had jokes take longer than that.
Yeah.
10 or 15 at the longest.
Really? Yeah, have you got an example of what it was and then what it ended up?
I had a joke. I was in my last tour show to this one. It was the final version of the joke was my grief counsellor died recently. How did it go? I find it really hard to remember jokes when I'm on stage, but he was so good, I didn't give a shit.
That
was a joke.
Yeah, brilliant. I'd say that's a classic you joke.
And what I tried, I must have done 20 or 30 versions of that over the years. Probably 2005 I started working on that.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me about their grief counsellor, and I think somebody's grief counsellor did die. I think I remember hearing somebody say about that. And I started working on different versions, and I just could not make it work in any way.
Yeah.
But it only worked when... I gave it a three-part rhythm. I gave it that little bit in the middle.
Yeah.
But he was so good. I didn't give a shit. My grief counsellor died. I didn't give a shit. Not funny.
No.
So that middle bit worked. And then I had to get the right phrasing of the punchline, something dismissive and a bit harsh and with the right sort of sounds. Mm. But I didn't give a shit. That was the right way. I've had a few, so there's loads of... another one I only got working recently because I had a joke. I've tried loads of variations on this. My wife always cheats at Monopoly, or my wife always cheats when she's on a diet. And then yada, 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 fucks other men, basically. That's the joke.
I always
cheat at Monopoly. I have sex with her sister or that sort of thing. Right? Not funny. So I did it. And eventually I got it to my wife always cheats when she's on a diet.
Yeah.
She fucks other men, right? Not funny. But stick a middle bit in, make it a three. So if a joke doesn't work as a two-part rhythm, make it as a three-part rhythm. If it doesn't work as a three-part rhythm, make it a two-part rhythm. So I rewrote it. My wife always cheats when she's on a diet. She hides bars of chocolates around the house. And fucks other men.
Nice.
Right? Now, that's a funny joke.
And also, they knew what was happening.
Yeah.
And they still laughed. That's how good it is.
That rhythm is elemental. That three-part rhythm is absolutely basic. It's wired into humanity's brain. It's the first joke book I ever read was by Rolf Harris, believe it or not. The first,
really?
Right. And genuinely, it was for kids. And it was a literal joke book. It wasn't a book of jokes. It was a book on joke technique and joke writing technique. So I learned the rule of three from Rolf Harris.
Oh, did you?
Because three is the minimum number of elements to set up and continue a pattern and then break the pattern. So you got story A, continuation of story A, story B. We're going this way, we're going this way. Now we're going this way.
Yeah.
So then that's why Englishman, Irishman, Scotsman, all those sorts of things. You set up the pattern, you continue the pattern, you create the expectation that the pattern will continue, and then you subvert the pattern with your third difference.
Mm.
So that's how all these things work. And it's such a powerful technique. And obviously it's the same as friends, Romans, countrymen, education, education, education. You see all these things all of the time. But I fixed jokes with that all the time. Another one that didn't work and wasn't funny, even until I put a hacky old shitty bit in the middle. I had the joke. I like to think of my wife as a trophy wife because she's got the previous winner's names tattooed down her back, right? quite a funny joke, but much funnier if you basically nick a fucking bridge of that old shitty humorism and you go, I like to think of my wife as a trophy wife, comma, because her ears stick out, comma, little laugh.
Okay.
And she's got the previous winner's names tattooed down her back.
Yeah.
Round of applause. So that's the difference.
In
rhythm.
I love that because I love those jokes because the audience think it's done.
Yeah, yeah.
They think, oh, that's an all right joke with the ears.
Yeah, and if it is a bit of a joke, then hopefully you don't telegraph it too much with your voice.
Yeah.
As to where you're going.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. So I find that stuff really interesting. And I think we have a tendency to ditch jokes too soon. And I will go, if a lot of these jokes, the D's and stuff, I will ditch first time out. I won't even, traditionally people say try it three times, didn't they?
Yeah.
A lot of them I just initially think, no, that's dog shit, so I won't try it twice. But nothing is ever wasted. It all goes back into the joke compost. It all goes back into my piles and piles of paper, my piles and piles of notebooks and all my old computer files.
Yeah.
My biggest regret was for my first 10 years in comedy, I couldn't afford a computer and I got so many missing jokes.
Oh, really?
Because I used to use my flatmates and I haven't got a record of loads of stuff, which is a real, I wish I had it now.
That grief one you said reminds me of one that I couldn't get to work. A similar sort of style was... because the origin of it, I saw this really brilliant Arnold Schwarzenegger motivational speaking video about making like the best use of your time. So basically, I had loads of different punches. I can't remember exactly how I did it, but it was something like I watched that. It's brilliant. I've been in bed all day watching it.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Yeah.
Or it was in bed all day watching it, or it was. No. The original thing was it was 2 hours. So that's why I found it funny, because it's still you make best use of time, but I sat here for 2 hours watching this
lovely thing.
And that gave me the idea.
Is it a real thing or is it just a set?
No, that's a real thing.
Nice.
So I'd seen that on there and that gave me the idea, lovely. But I've never been able to get it. I like I've been in bed all day watching it.
Yeah, yeah. Futility is one of my favourite comic themes. It's really hard to do, but when you can get it right, that is lovely.
Yeah, yeah. But that's my, that was the example I was going to say was, I know there's a perfect way for that joke.
Right.
I just... Because it's got everything that you need, but it's just getting that, like you say, that rhythm. Maybe I didn't put it in a three-parter. Maybe I didn't put it in a two-parter.
Tell me again.
I mean, I can't remember exactly how it went. I was watching a motivational video. I mean, I'm wasting time now, aren't I? I think I just took the Arnold Schwarzenegger out. I think eventually I went, well, the setup's a bit long.
I could
just go, I watched a video on YouTube about making the most of your time. I've been in bed all day watching it. That isn't how I did it, because I wouldn't have said watch twice. That's not very much use, Gary.
No, it's all right. But I think you need to change your tag. I watched this great video on, how to use the time more productively. It's so good. I watch it every day now.
There we go.
Or something like that.
It was so good. It's the middle bit.
Yeah, yeah. Those middle bits are so useful. It looks like redundant wordage.
That's the same as your griefing, isn't it? It was so good.
Yeah, yeah. It's
so effective.
I use that all the time. It's such a great little technique. And you start you start watching people, and Jimmy Carr uses it as a lot as well, all that sort of stuff. You look for those little bridges because you start off going, I want to make it as short as possible. No, you don't.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, 100%. All right, Lula, it's early.
So, no, it's not. Yeah, but no, it's really interesting, isn't it? So, you haven't done it until you've tried it as a two-part.
I had a really short joke that I was really... Because Jimmy Carr did a thing where he was, like, trying to write the shortest joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had one, and it just didn't work. And I don't know whether it was too niche or what. It's a Star Wars joke, and it was just, Chewie's tough.
Oh, that's nice. That's great.
That is the best that has ever done, right?
Yeah.
That's annoyed me now that worked. Because that's never worked. And I didn't know whether... I don't know. I think
that's nice.
It's just out. They're just like, oh, unless I start it with the same setup. But then it's like Jimmy Carr. That's how he started.
Yeah, well, it's how you can make it as a device, but he's done it.
Maybe that's what he had the trouble with. Maybe he had the joke.
It will be that. I've got this material. How can I construct a device to get this over? And that's a lot of what putting a show together is. The shortest joke I've ever got to work reliably on stage is 5 words, which was bought a chameleon, lost it. so that and then you go look at it, so it's a simple little trick there. I often leave out the word I at the beginning of sentences. It's not necessary. People are, the eye is implicit, so you don't need to say it. So that's 20% of your, or, you know, 16.6 recurring percent of your words removed.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, so that sort of stuff is really useful.
Is that how you do that joke? Because I've seen you do that joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to listen to myself on tape, but I'm sure the eye is certainly silent in my notebooks.
But you
or
left
a chameleon.
A long,
yeah, yeah.
You left a bigger gap though when you normally deliver it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, normally.
Mm.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That's a good technique. The shortest joke I've ever tried, I tried to write the shortest thing, and the shortest I've ever got is just, it's just the word ampersand with the and in ampersand replaced with an ampersand.
I'm so confused.
Well, you know, like the squiggly at means ampersand, doesn't it? The squiggly at is an ampersand
which represents
the word and, but the word and is in the word ampersand, so I replaced the word and in ampersand with
ampersand. Oh, yeah.
That's why I don't use it even as a visual thing. I don't think it even worked on Twitter where people like that sort of stuff.
Oh, what did I have? Oh, that was it. Hang on. Over here. Zero in on, and then in on, it'll be a zero.
Oh, that's a crossword clue.
Yeah,
that's lovely.
Yeah.
Do you sometimes find that you're basically writing crossword clues?
Yeah, totally. Or it's catchphrase, isn't it?
Yeah. But no, that's lovely. That's really nice.
Really lovely. But I mean, that's only a visual thing. And I put it on Twitter and it got
nothing.
It's
nice though. It is good. That's clever. But yeah, sometimes you get that thing, oh, it's more clever than it is funny. But that is nice. I can't do crosswords and I kind of think I should be able to, but I can never make them work.
Yeah, I was doing one the other day and I said to my girlfriend, the clue is lemon carbonated drink. She says Sprite. Oh, that doesn't work.
That's a good joke.
Weirdly, with that joke, when I've tried it, If I put that first joke, so if I do a new material night, first joke always works. If I put that joke in a set when there's been some really strong ones, doesn't work.
It's not an A anymore and it's measured against other A's.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's weird how that happens.
You can put together a set of all A's and they will stop being A's immediately.
Mm.
It's impossible to construct something monotone like that. It will have its own flows and you've got to work it out. Yeah, because you're competing against yourself. It's like Usain Bolt trying to set his personal best. Well, he's competing against Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
So like 9 seconds is still going to be awful. You know, so yeah.
That's interesting.
It doesn't matter how much. I always think, like, if I drive home after a hard gig, I'd go, right, what went wrong? What jokes would have been good enough to save me? I love that thing. I love, what is a joke that is good enough to work even if they hate me, right? That's a really good yardstick. And I think, well, what would happen if I constructed a show of all those jokes? And the answer is it wouldn't work because they wouldn't remain A's. It's impossible. You can whittle it down. Sometimes you've got to do a set and you go, well, hang on, I've got to do like 40 minutes at this gig or whatever. And you go, well, that's going to be quite hard to put it together. And you go, well, it shouldn't be hard. I've done 3 tour shows. I've done 4 Edinburgh shows. Why is it hard to put it together? There's enough material there, but there's not, because you put it together and it just doesn't all click. It doesn't all work. It doesn't all have the same rating. So actually,
it depends if it's like your tour or it's just a general gig.
Obviously it's a million times easier to your own audience. Mm. You know? But yeah, so you can't, just because it's an A, it doesn't mean it really is. There's A's and there's A's.
So
I find that stuff really interesting.
You got anything else that you want to...
Oh, let's pick some actual jokes and let's see if you can figure out why some of these didn't work or see if I find something. Right, so I've got a new little formula here I'm using. Actually, no, that's not funny. They work, so let's not do those. because I'm going to use that in the next show. Right, this is interesting, right? And this ties into... So your crossword thing, you've got 7-up, right?
Yeah.
Now, there isn't an up in a crossword, is there?
No, and that is one reason why I thought it might not work.
Agreed. Yeah. However, it doesn't stop it, does it, right?
No.
Because it doesn't matter if it's a lie, as long as people think it's true. If you've got, you know, like post-truth and whatnot, in jokes, that's fine. Mm. If you've got the accurate... If there's a fact that 80% of people think... And 20% of people know the correct fact.
Yeah.
If you use the 20% that 20% of people know in your joke, it won't work.
Mm.
Use the wrong one that 80% of people think.
Oh.
So you're right to use 7-up. It doesn't distract anything from that.
See, I had a different theory.
Go on.
I had the theory that in the joke, I'm the idiot. So they can buy in that I just went, I don't know how crosswords work. So, but they, that both of those reasons could be it.
It could work, and you've got a much sillier sort of stage stick than me, so I could totally see that working. That works. So on here, you can see the problem with this joke. I wrote this and I thought, oh, this won't work. A sick friend of mine got a job with MI5, did really well for himself, and sold over 800 kitchens. Right now, Now, MFI went bust about 10 years ago.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing, right? How many people knew that MFI weren't around anymore? Yeah, right. But it doesn't matter, does it? It's really interesting, isn't it? So I looked at it, I thought, so you can adapt that and you can make it more accurate. But no, why? You can
kill the joke. So that does work?
Yeah, it does work. It works really well.
Yeah, yeah.
And partly that's because my audience are older, I guess.
Okay. Yeah,
If I was playing to a bunch of college kids or whatever, it wouldn't work. But I thought that's really interesting. So I don't worry about whether it's accurate or not.
No, no. And also, it's so quick.
Yeah.
You don't really give them time to actually make a decision.
Yeah, yeah, and also hopefully they're in joke land rather than thinking these are real statements and real points of view, so they're just going with it and it doesn't actually matter. They don't actually believe.
And also the story could be from 7 years ago, like, essentially.
That does bridge... Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That could bridge the logic gaps. It's all in the past tense.
Yeah, yeah.
I find, you're supposed to use present tense for writing things to make it seem more engaging and whatnot in storytelling and stuff. I don't use it very often. I find it quite hard to use and I find it seems unnatural in jokes to use the present tense a lot. I sometimes will go a little bit that way, but I nearly always use the past tense.
Yeah.
A lot of mine
are conversations.
Right.
So that's always past tense in that sense.
Right. I find
You don't do that, no?
A little bit. I try. I'm not very good at it. Well, good. Maybe you can help me on this one then. Right.
Because sometimes I find that conversations make it a joke that doesn't work.
They can, but I find it really hard to do. It's a skill I struggle with. Right. So this joke... tried. I think I got it. Yeah.
As in sort of saying, she said this, I said that.
So you just literally reported speech. Well, I mean, that's what I've got here.
Okay.
It's just something I did on Twitter and I rewrote it and I tried it the other week and it doesn't work and it should work. One time my wife and I were at the travel agents. She said, a ticket to Belgium, please. He said, Antwerp. She said, no, he's not coming. Right. Now, so that's a fairly simple joke. And I've already done the obvious thing on that. I did some A-B testing on that joke. I did... One of the things, if a joke doesn't work, is change the victim. So I put put two versions of that joke up on Twitter a few weeks apart, one with the joke about being about the husband and one with the joke about being the wife.
Okay. So
it gets much, much funnier laugh at being about a husband.
If it's about you?
Yeah. Yeah. Or generally a male victim will get a bigger laugh in a joke than a female victim because people are less protective. So that's often a trick that I will use in trying to fixing things. So I know that is funnier with the man or me as the target. Mm. So I was trying to think, how can I do that as a joke? And I can't do it because it's reported speech and I struggle. I can't make that work. How would you do it?
But it did work.
But that's because these people are too nice.
So I don't know. So how inconsistent is it?
Badly.
Really? Because twerp isn't used much now.
That might be the problem. The problem might just be that I'm 46. I've got a joke about somebody in a wazook here. And
I just about remember twerp.
Right. Well, that might be the problem.
Yeah, give me hands up.
Can we rename some places in Belgium?
Dick.
Let's see. You're right. Maybe that's it. So how many people know twerp?
It's all the no offence, but
yeah. How many people under 40 know twerp?
And who doesn't have a clue what we're talking about? Yeah, it's the younger.
See, for my audience,
have you done it on tour?
Yes. No. I've tried it on tour. It's never progressed. Never done anything.
So one time, my wife and I were at the travel night. What about
planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Does it matter that you're there?
I put myself in because I was trying to square the circle and make it work as a little scene, and I couldn't figure out a better way to do it. But I think it gets in the way, but I couldn't figure out a way to take me out of it.
Okay, how what about... My natural go-to would be... Trouble is... Okay, I've already found a problem in what I was going to say. But if I used to work in a travel agent's... No.
Because
I was going to say, but then in my jokes, I'm the idiot. So it would be her misunderstanding, which I don't like that. So it would have to be me going in there, but then who am I talking about?
Right.
To misunderstand. And like you say, if it's a girlfriend, so who would be a natural person that it's all right to, your brother?
You could do it that, yeah. Or
I went to book
an unpopular celebrity.
I went
at the time, you know, Piers Morgan or something. Is it very easy? Just
I went to book some tickets for me and Piers Morgan
to Belgium.
To Belgium, she said Antwerp. I went, because that way I've already told them that I want tickets for both people.
Piers Morgan's wife went to a travel agent.
There we go. Lovely.
Yes, tickets to Belgium, please. Antwerp. Now I'm going on my own.
Perfect. Bang. Perfect. And also, you could be working there.
Yeah,
Piers Morgan's wife came in. Perfect. That's great.
That's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that could work.
This is good, this.
This is fun. We should just do this every day,
yeah,
Gary,
yeah, all right.
When we're writing
Can
our
you
new
move
shows.
Up north?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll do this. Well, that's good, isn't it? I like that.
That's a couple of good ones there. Let me just do a time check. We've got 9 minutes left. So just an in-between point, I mean, you might not have any. Has anyone got any questions about anything or not? If you have, shout them out. About jokes or anything. If not, we just crack on. Okay.
I'm glad to see we've really engaged you.
Yeah.
Right.
One question,
yes,
oh,
go ahead.
How do you remember 60 jokes in one set?
Well, a new material set, I just read them out.
Yeah, he's just reading those out.
It's more effort to learn them than to write them. I'm only going to learn them if they're good.
I always think I'm wasting brain space if I learn something that isn't worth learning.
Agreed.
But do you mean like with like a tour show? Because I only ever do 50-minute shows in Edinburgh. So that's, I don't know, it could be from 150 to 200. But when you do your tour show, how many are you doing?
It's about 300 in this show. And in one particular week earlier this year, I also recorded 2 old shows at Liverpool. So for that week, I had to remember 700 odd jokes in order. So,
I mean, wow.
But I don't naturally have a great memory. You and Milton were both saying you've got pretty good memories. I don't, but I worked at it. I bought a book called Moonwalking with Einstein by a guy called Josh Foer to learn some basic memory techniques.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. But the technique that probably the most common question you get on this, and I'm sure you get this all the time, how do you remember it? Now, and of all the skills involved in putting together a show, I reckon I could teach any one of you to remember a 200 joke sequence in an afternoon. Providing that you already knew the jokes, which you would if you'd written them, right? But if you need to remember, I need to do these 200 jokes in this order, or better still, in a flexible order, I could teach you to do that because the techniques are really simple. I won't go into too much detail, but it's called a memory palace. If you watch Sherlock, they'll talk about that. And it's a real thing. It's a visualization technique for remembering stuff. Your brain is a caveman's brain, right? Evolutionary, we're still running around on the plains of Africa. We haven't caught up with all of this modernity. So you're going to struggle to remember names and numbers and abstract shit like that. But what you're not going to struggle to remember is places, because that's what you are designed to do, because that's what your ancestors did. So you can picture things really easily and quickly and learn places because you had to get from the cave, past the marshes to the berries and then back via, you know, avoiding the neighboring tribe or whatever fucking shit it was, right? So you learn things really quickly. If you want to get up in the middle of the night to go to the toilet without waking up your partner, you have a visual map of your room in your head. And you don't need to turn the light on because you know my bed's here, my bedside table is here, there's a pile of clothes there that I haven't put away, and so on and so on. And you could do all that. Now, if you were staying in a hotel, you could learn all of that in 2 or 3 days really quickly, and you'd have that cognitive map. So you take what you learn really quickly and easily, places, and you map what you want to learn onto it. So my first live at the Apollo, I learnt a 105-joke sequence to that, which was the jokes that I'd agreed with the producers, and that took me about 2 hours to learn. And you do... You take what you know, so I use my house, and you create an extremely vivid mental image for each joke that you want to remember, as graphic and as outrageous as possible, and you put them around your house, and then you mentally walk around inside your head. So most tour shows, I wake up in bed first thing in the morning and the first joke is next to me in bed. It's one of the reasons why I very often start with a self-deprecating sex joke. Well, obviously, a self-deprecating start is a good way to get people on side and low status and all that stuff, or pretending to be low status. But my last tour show is probably easy to remember. So the last tour show opened with a joke about neighbouring towns, and the neighbouring town to me is a little northern town I think of as like a sort of a Lowry town. So I have an image of that town in bed next to me. I have smokestacks, there's matchstick men and dogs running around, there's smoke coming out of the towers and I can smell the sulfur, and there's like a horn blasting, I can hear the sound of the horn and people leaving and men going to work, right, and status quo are at the end singing about it or whatever. Yeah. So all of this stuff is in there, and that image is as bright and vivid as possible, and you remember that image very easily. Once you put it in there, it will stay in your head for ages. The second joke in that show was about, the joke was, I'm a lot sportier than I might look. In fact, I picked up a little niggle at the gym the other day. I mean, he pronounces it Nigel. Yeah. So, right, that was the joke. So I had two friends at college who were both called Nigel.
Yeah.
And on my bedside table, there was basically an image of them bumming. Right. Sorry if any of them are listening, by the way, because that was really graphic, exaggerated image, right?
Is that actually there in your house?
Yeah. I made the statue and everything. No, I just created a mental image of that, because that's a shocking, outrageous image that you don't forget. The third show in that joke, that show was about
it's
a voyeur.
It's in my head now, yeah.
Next thing in the room is the bedroom window. I had a huge, giant Godzilla eye looking through the window, all bloodshot, staring at me. Once that image is there, this show was years ago, and I still remember every day. You know, as the last joke in the show was about the woman next door, the girl next door. So as I walk out the front door of the house, there she is looking over the fence. So you create all of those images and you put them around your house. So that's how you remember a show.
Wow.
And it's actually relatively easy to do. Once you make the image as exaggerated as possible. But that's all of those like professional gamblers and memory experts and hypnotists and whatever. Those are all tricks are visual tricks. And of all the skills involved in putting together a show of jokes, that's the easiest to learn.
Wow. I think that's quite a thorough answer. Oh, we've got another hand up. Are you just going to say that's bullshit?
I remember you. Trial and error.
How do you decide which order to put the jokes in?
Right. Partly I have a judgment on how strong the joke is as to where it goes in the set. The later in the set, the stronger it has to be, or it won't work. I put it in an order where the punchline isn't given away by any of the six preceding jokes. So there's nothing too similar to have you already thinking of the way that I'm going to try and slip you into. And a lot of the rest is just juggling it together and trying to pace them. So I've got an A, and then I've got a B, and then I've got another B, and then I've got an A, and go, right, this is the start of the show. Can I get away with a few weaker ones here? Because they're probably more focused. And, you know, so some of that is just creating a little pattern. I don't cluster too much by topic because I find it sometimes telegraphs where you're going with it. Plus, I'm not very good at it. Mm. So how do you order yours?
Mine tend to be in topics, loosely.
That's interesting. And is that for memory, or does that help the jokes?
I think it is a memory thing, but also sometimes you can convince them that there is some sort of logical story to what you're doing when there really isn't.
People do that. I think even Emo Phillips spoke about it, didn't he? He will try to cluster things together and link things. And again, I guess it's an attempt to have that relatability and have people buy into it as if it's slightly more real than it seems to be. So I don't know. I mean, one of my targets, my next tour, is to learn how to link jokes and to try to construct a little narrative. And I've tried, and I'm not very good at it, but I'm going to try.
Because that's
learn.
What Milton said. He started in the last couple of tour shows,
I think it is a good technique if you can do it.
Glenn Moore's very good at that.
Right.
He's not strictly one-liners, but he's close to one-liners, I'd say. And his shows are always linked as if it's like a story.
Oh, that's interesting. I might listen to that. I struggle with it, but I think it's a powerful technique, and I don't use it. The other thing I'm going to try and learn is how to write longest form pub jokes.
Okay.
And I don't know of any textbooks or theory on how to write longer form pub jokes. I've never seen any. I'd love to know. I don't know if there are any rules. I think they all grew organically back in the day.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know how they're constructed. I think they were just passed, you know, they're all blind watchmaker stuff as they got passed from people to people and comic to comic and all got adapted and learned and evolved. So I'd like to know how to write those. I'd love to be able to write the three-legged pig joke and things like that. That would be amazing if I could do that. And that's something I struggle with. That's my next big target.
Next tour show.
Well, it's the next thing I'm going to try and learn. I might fail. Yeah. If I'm no good at it, it won't go in the show.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, that is exactly on time. Thank you.
I did tread on a spider earlier, so I think we've got 7 minutes.
Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, what an end to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being an awesome audience and listening to us. Let's hear it for my guest today is Gary Delaney. I've been Miles Simmons. Thank you very much. Cheers. Gary Delaney!
Woo-hoo! All right.
We're in the West.
The Wild West.
The Wild West.
Wiki Wiki Wild West. Jim West.
That's Gary Delaney. What a podcast.
Good one, Gary.
Good one, Gary. After the podcast that we were chatting, they were like, we could just keep going. Like, there's so much.
Well, let's have him back.
No, we've already sorted that. When I'm near where he lives, I'm going to pop in and we're going to record another one.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Will the audience still be there?
They can come. Well, I don't know. He didn't specify, but I'll ask him.
Show up with them.
Or probably won't.
What's Thirsk like?
I didn't get a chance to look round. I parked in the Tesco car park.
What was that like?
Normal.
How big a Tesco?
Supermarket. Mm. Like, I'd say not a town. Normal town.
Not one of the really big Tescos.
No, not a super store.
Are they called Extra?
Yeah.
The massive ones.
Yeah, not one of them.
A supermarket.
Not the one
that's like
sells,
a double-decker supermarket.
Yeah, that sells like too many clothes. That's the difference, I think, in houseware.
Mm.
It's like a normal one would have one option of like plates.
Yeah.
But I think an extra.
Tesco
might
extra.
Have
four. Yeah. Plate, I was going to say four.
Plate
as well.
Variances. Yeah. So great.
How many plates do you own?
How many plates do I own? I don't own any actually, because cool. I moved in somewhere where they already lived, my flatmates.
And we've had a conversation like this before that you don't really own anything.
What?
You don't really own any furniture or anything, do you?
What are you talking about?
I'm sure you've
said
that.
No, we haven't had that conversation.
You don't own any plates or a fork or anything.
And I own a sofa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. That's all you need.
I own. I don't know much.
You don't own any fucking plates.
No, but I use other people's plates. What's the point of more plates? There's not enough.
How old are you?
I'm old enough to have your own plate.
I ought to have one plate.
Well, I did have plates, and then I moved somewhere where I don't.
What did you do
with
plates?
What, you
smash them on the floor?
Yes, it was a Greek wedding.
Marty used to live in a Greek wedding venue.
I used to live in a Greek wedding. Joel. What's happening?
I don't know. Next week, what's going on?
Next week! I don't know what's happening next week, Joel.
It'll be someone brilliant.
Well, we've got quite a few. So we've had some, like, what you consider big hitters.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't want to say the next people aren't big hitters, but they might not be your TV, but...
Yet.
But we've recorded some really great podcasts
from
cracking circuit comedians and a professor of comedy. Oliver Double. I feel like that one's coming now. I feel like that one's going to be the next one.
All right.
Because it's a bit different.
Yeah.
Because he teaches comedy.
Laughter. Is he a comedian?
He was. No, he is. He's more of a comedian than Bill Murray. That's a statement, isn't it?
Bloody hell.
Maybe I'll retract that.
Wow.
I'm retracting that. I'm going to wait to see what the response is. Because Bill Murray written his own stuff?
He must have written something.
Was he on Saturday Night Live in the day?
I don't know.
I was watching.
He's definitely from some sort of Chicago improv background.
Is a top recommendation.
Yeah.
Netflix, The Movies That Made Us, 4 episodes, and it goes through some of the old classic movies and in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And Ghostbusters is one of them. But it hasn't mentioned Bill Murray being on Saturday Night Live because what's his name was.
He first rose to fame on Saturday Night Live.
Did he?
Earning himself an Emmy Award.
Oh, God, I feel like an idiot.
Well, let me tell you that...
but he doesn't write that.
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia
lists him as an American actor.
Actor.
And comedian.
And comedian. Well...
Many strings to that man's bow.
Hashtag Bill Murray Awooga. Good on him. Good on him, the old boy. Can we edit it so that it sounds like I was pro Bill Murray being a comedian? I wasn't saying that he's not a comedian.
It's just interesting that you hate Bill Murray.
I don't hate Bill Murray. I'm performing inside him tonight at 6:30.
All right, that's it.
I think he's great. But obviously, I wasn't like, he wasn't, I didn't go and see him do stand up. Do you know what I mean? So I didn't know what his background was. I just know him from cracking films, and I didn't know if he wrote them, Joel.
Where are we? It's time to go.
What's that noise?
It's time to go.
What the hell's that? That's my phone. Oh, it's
the Adam Buxton podcast.
Adam Buxton podcast.
Oh, there you go. That count. He's a guest now.
Does that count as him being a guest?
Yep.
He is, technically. He's a
Gary
voice.
Gary Delaney and Adam Buxton. What an episode. That's it. We've got to go descend into madness.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.